All right, podcast people, welcome back. I am your host, Pastor Albert Benjamin Kemp II for Asking for a Friend podcast, season 2, episode 3. And I am here with my co-host, guest star, partner in life, bride, primary source of companionship, romance, and love, my wife, Lindsay Vasgard Kemper.
Thanks for that introduction.
Anytime. I was thinking, how can I make this more awkward? And there we go.
No, you can't.
So we're back and we are here to answer some questions. We got some great questions again this week, and we are going to dive right in. If you haven't been tracking with the series, we are talking about the intersection of mental health and spirituality. They are interconnected and intertwined in a ton of different ways. They influence one another. And so this podcast is aimed specifically to hit some questions with some specific target areas that we might not be able to spend an entire Sunday morning on, but they're very important, very valid questions. And so we want to ask and answer with some specific stuff. We're going to do it just like we did last time, where I'm going to ask Lindsay some questions. She's picked some questions to ask me, and we're going to get started. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. So I've got the first question for you. And it's this. I'm processing past hurts with men in counseling and unsure if dating is a good idea right now. So got somebody writing in that says they've got some past hurts with some guys. Kind of define that how you will. And they're wondering, are they ready to date? Are they ready to be in a relationship to pursue kind of that romantic connection? What would you say to somebody in that context?
Well, I think I would first say ask your therapist or talk about it with your therapist. And since he or she knows the situation, what's going on, I would definitely process that in therapy. I think that it can go a couple of different ways. With some of the clients that I've worked with that maybe have had a partner cheat on them in the past, it's helpful that they are in therapy while they're dating somebody else, because when the current boyfriend maybe we'll do some things that triggers the memory of being cheated on, we can process that. We can work through the insecurities, the distrust that's going on there. However, I think other ways are if you are still working through significant problems and dating somebody will slow down that growth process, then I think that maybe you should hold off on dating for a little while until you continue to work on the issues that you're dealing with.
Yeah, one of the things we've talked about in past relationship series is when we go into relationships, marriage, things like that, most of the problems that happen aren't married people problems. They're not marriage problems. They're problems that I have as an individual, insecurities that I have as an individual, communication deficiencies that I have as an individual, and they get manifest when all of a sudden I am covenantally bonded and married to somebody else. So a marriage problem would be you left the toothpaste out, or what we would call a marriage problem. A person problem is I have a problem with infidelity. I have a problem with, the way that we handle money, the lack of communication that happens. I mean, all those are personal person problems. And so what I would say to that is, one of the things to look out for is how do you feel like you are tracking in your progress of becoming a whole person? Because healthy people attract healthy people, and you really want a healthy marriage.
Yeah, that's right. Good job. So for you, Ben, is mental illness a physical event with spiritual side effects or a spiritual event with physical side effects?
Tell me what you mean by that question. I got her.
Well, since I didn't write the question, I'm going to interpret it how I think it is interpreted, which is mental health caused by physical factors that then produce spiritual side effects, or is mental health more of a manifest in spiritual, has its roots in spiritual issues that then come out with physical side effects?
So I would answer that question by just saying yes. I think both can be true. For instance, I think it's very possible for there to be a spiritual problem that has mental health consequences. And I do think that it's possible to have mental health problems that create spiritual consequences. And so what I mean by that is you have someone who has made a spiritual decision, maybe more so a sinful decision. And because of their sinful decision, maybe the shame associated with it, the guilt that's associated with it, it drives them and it triggers them towards a depressive episode. It triggers them towards anxiety, something along those lines. So it started in kind of a spiritual realm of there's something that spiritually I have done that I need to work through, pray through, confess, perhaps even get counseling for. But it has spiritual or is kind of a sinful decision, but it has kind of the mental health implications. The other side of that would be because of my depression, because of the chemical imbalance, my genetic predisposition that has been triggered, I can't get out of bed. Therefore, my prayer life, my reading life, I don't serve. I don't go to community group. I don't worship, things like that. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, but I think it doesn't necessarily need to be one or the other. It can be both. But I think either way, the important thing to know is when one happens, they're usually both affected. And so paying attention to both is important because sometimes we only want to treat one or the other, either the mental health side or the spiritual side instead of the mental health side. So I think really paying attention to whatever's happening, paying attention to both is really, really important. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that was a very good answer. I'm impressed. But yes, I agree.
I do this for a living, son. just kidding.
But I do think that it's important to remember that mental, physical, spiritual are all intertwined. And we want to separate them because we, you know, it can seem chaotic when they're all affecting each other.
Yeah.
But we can't ignore the fact that they do all affect each other. So
yeah, and sometimes they can be really hard to pull apart and figure out which is which and what is what and which came first, the chicken or the egg type of thing. So I think just paying attention to the whole equation is important. All right, so I think this is one of the more difficult questions that we've received, and so I'm interested to hear your response on this. How can I let go of the anger I feel towards God for giving me a mental illness? So this is someone who has a mental illness. We don't know exactly what that is, but there's this sense of anger, probably resentment towards God. And so how would you help somebody to deal with this anger of a God who they feel like has given them this mental illness?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Well, I'm going to come at it from more of a therapist standpoint. I'll let you answer it in the more spiritual side of things. But I would say the first step is to just process the anger itself. Anger is a very uncomfortable emotion, and a lot of people want to avoid feeling it, avoid processing it. They don't want to sit with it. It's, I'm angry. How can I move past this as fast as I can? And I would say the first thing is we got to process that anger.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, because you can't move on from somewhere if you don't acknowledge that's where you're at.
So let me ask you a kind of quick follow-up to that. I've heard you give people suggestions. In fact, you've given me suggestions to help process things and process anger if I'm frustrated about something. So give everybody who's listening to this, if they're dealing with anger, maybe it's towards God, maybe it's just in general. What are some things, some tactics, some practices to process that anger? What does that look like functionally?
I think one of my favorite things that I encourage my clients to do is to write, either to journal and keep a journal that's kind of a journey through this anger and what you're feeling. Hmm. Another one that I often suggest too is to write a letter, to the people that are making you angry, or to write a letter to God about your anger. But always use paper. Don't write an email because you never want that thing to accidentally get sent. but I think that's a very beneficial practice that you can do on your own time. It's personal. If you want to share it with a friend, you can. If you want to go see a therapist, absolutely. But for starters, just writing, the act of writing it out is getting it outside of yourself. And then you're able to see it, take a step back from it, and then be able to process that on your own.
Yeah. And to clarify, that doesn't mean send the letter. That's just write the letter you're sending it. And I can attest to that. There's been times when I remember a time that I was really frustrated with something that was happening with the company, and I got an email and I was so you know, livid, and you just said you need to write them an email, you know, don't send it, you know, just write it in a Word document and don't send it. And I remember thinking, that's the silliest thing. That's this like therapist soft stuff.
You should listen.
And I sat down and I typed the most aggressive email, and I got done and I'm like, I feel so much better. So yeah. I can attest to that, how that works. So what else?
I have some good ideas. Well, I think it can be other things like going to see a therapist or even just talking to a friend and admitting that you're angry. And then working through that process of finding, you know, I'm a big believer in kind of finding what is the purpose or what's the point. And if there isn't an obvious one, then you make one. Just from personal things in my life of when I've gone through stuff of I wanted to know the answer and I wanted to kind of know why this was happening to me. And I ended up just kind of making that decision for myself of this is why, and this is how I can kind of turn it from a horrible or sad situation into something that I find meaning and purpose in.
So you intentionally ascribe meaning to something, which, to be truthful, most of the time it's a guesswork of our interpretive understanding of why a thing happens, which means we're kind of in a derivative fashion ascribing meaning to it anyways, just almost on a subconscious level. If anybody got that, by the way,
that was real deep.
Don't put that on Twitter, because I don't even know what I just said. One thing that I would add to what you to that from the more spiritual side of it, and by spiritual I just mean like from the Bible and how we would look at that, is to say that this is one of those questions that it's tough, because the theological or the biblical answer is not an emotionally satisfying one, which is to say that part of that assumes that God has given that to you, and we know that God wouldn't give that necessarily. What we have, all, not just mental illness, all sickness, all suffering, all death, is a result of Genesis and the fall. Sin entered the world, death entered the world, destruction entered the world. And God allows us to live in a world where those things do happen and are part of our existence. And it's not that God said, oh, I don't like this person, I'm giving it to them. But because he doesn't hand it to us, doesn't mean that he doesn't also allow us to walk through that. And that's a difficult thing to parse out, right? Because how do you go through the sovereignty of God that he could stop it, but he didn't? And that can incite some anger. And so just knowing that God didn't give that to you, but his strength and his grace is sufficient for you, I can promise you that if he would not withhold his only son to be sacrificed on the cross for you, means that he wouldn't give you what it takes to walk through this. And the other thing I would say, and I would say this as sensitively as I possibly can, if you are angry with God because he's giving you, or you feel that he has given you a mental illness, I would do my best to work through that mental illness and not come to a conclusion of your anger with God while you're still working through it. Mm-hmm. So if you are working through depression, just as a hypothetical, mm-hmm. if you're working through depression and part of that depression is your anger with God, there's a good chance as you walk through and perhaps out of that season of depression, maybe through counseling, maybe through therapy, maybe through medicine, and now you're at a more healthy, balanced emotional state, you might not feel that same sense of anger. It might be part of that mental illness that is causing the feeling of anger.
Yeah, that's right. Good job. So, in a similar way, or on a similar note, how would you rebuild your faith after you've lost it because of a mental illness?
That's a really good question.
It wasn't mine.
But you owned it so well.
But I asked it, so.
So I'm going to go off a couple of assumptions here, and I'll try to be clear about them. How do you rebuild your faith after you've lost it because of mental illness? I would assume by rebuild your faith means not that you have totally lost faith and there's a disbelief in God and you are now coming at it from an atheistic perspective saying, I don't believe in God. How do I regain a belief in God? This is more so probably or at least I'm assuming it's more of I used to feel like I was close with God. I had this mental illness and now I feel light years away. Would that be probably a safe assumption?
I think so.
Okay. So if that's not, then, you know, tweet at me or something and we'll clarify it. But I would say one, the way to build a relationship with God or back with God in terms of rebuilding your faith is the same way you built it in the first place. It's about communication. It's about, this is a kind of an oversimplification, but we communicate with God, and that's how relationships are built, time spent in communication. So I pray. It's the main way I speak to God. I read his word. That's the main way he speaks to me. Community, worship, communal worship, hearing the teaching of his word, stuff like that. I mean, all those things, serving other people. As basic as it sounds, we can try to overcomplicate it sometimes, but the only, I think, different piece of advice that I would offer, and I would say this is so important, and I see people over and over make this mistake. We want to get back to where we were, not realizing that that's not possible because we aren't who we were, where we were, of where we're trying to get back to. So everything in life helps to create who I am and how I exist and just kind of who I am as a person, right? And so as I have accomplished and done more and gone through more experiences in life, I'm now a different person. And so for me to try to get back to a place where I was, I'm now a whole different, perspective, a whole different idea. And so for me to try to get back to where I was as a freshman in college, now as a 36-year-old man, like, that's not even in the same context, right? And so trying to get back to where I was isn't really a thing to get to. What I really want to do is say, I want to be close and intimate with God again. And he's always there and he's always ready. And so I would just say, continue to take the steps of the things that you know to do. And that will come and happen as a byproduct of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. And I think definitely adding in having that support and that accountability of people that can help keep you on track and support you through that is vital.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. So, all right, this is going to, and this is, I like this. This is kind of general, but I like it because it's general, because I think you're going to be able to hit a lot of like different thoughts along the lines with this. It just says, I'd love to hear you talk about addiction and how to overcome it. I'd love to hear you talk about addiction and how to overcome it. You talked a little bit about addiction last week and just kind of behavioral stuff, but I think addiction, it's a whole lot of different things, covers a whole lot of different subjects. So broad strokingly, addiction and overcoming it, what advice would you give?
Yeah, so this is going to be an hour-long podcast because we're going to just do a whole talk on addiction. Well, I think first off, we need to, or I need to clarify that addiction is a disease. Whether you are addicted to substances or gambling or pornography or whatever, what that, I'll just say substances, like for just lack of better words, for what that substance does is it elicits the pleasure signals in your brain. So if we're going with substances literally change the chemistry in your brain, which is why you get the high feeling or the like relaxed feeling with alcohol. I mean, it changes kind of your body's chemistry. So when people continually abuse substances, the body changes its chemistry permanently, which is then why when they're not high or they're not doing whatever the addiction is, they feel, have a lower mood, they don't get as happy. And that's why they continually do the substance, because they're trying to have those happy feelings or those pleasure receptors again and again.
Interesting. So it not only kind of deadens your pleasure receptors, so to speak, but it also makes normal life not as enjoyable or, as happy as it once was.
Right. Because if you do cocaine, your brain eventually cannot handle the amount of neurotransmitters that cocaine is doing. And so then eventually it will stop producing as much neurotransmitters to accommodate for that.
That's fascinating.
Thanks. Yeah.
Neuroscience. Here we go.
Don't fact check me on all this, but no. So that's why it's called a disease model, because you eventually become addicted to that substance.
Okay. So how would you say, for someone who hears that and they say, cool, so now my brain's jacked up. How do I overcome this now, chemistry experiment gone wrong? I'm sure somebody phrased it just like that, by the way.
Just like that. Chemistry experience has gone wrong. Well, I would definitely say that you need to see a therapist and you need to see a doctor, depending on how bad the addiction is. Some people have to go to inpatient detox facilities. And again, where I'm talking more like drugs and alcohol, or there are support groups. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fantastic group because it's all based on accountability, and you have to come in and you have milestones that you reach, but you also have people that are going to ask you those hard questions of when, you know, are you, have you used? So I think it depends on the substance that you use, but it's very hard to overcome addiction, or I'll say it's almost impossible to overcome addiction on your own.
Is it just that outside source of accountability that you think in prodding and poking that gives you the, what is it that you think about the not aloneness, the communal aspect, whether it's through mm-hmm. therapy or accountability? What is it about that helps people to really overcome that?
I think, well, it's a slippery slope that if you are not having to share what your behaviors have been or what you've been using, example is I have when people that I meet with that maybe have an alcohol addiction, and let's say it's to liquor, hard liquor, they often want like to know, well, can I just go in and have a beer? What if I'm watching a football game with my friends and I just want to have a beer?
Yeah.
And we talk a lot about it's a slippery slope because one beer will lead to two beers could lead to three beers, and then you're going home and you're buying a handle and drinking it by yourself.
Yeah, I see that. Let me ask a question about this, because I think this is where most people would maybe have a problem with some of this, is that at what point to the normal person, and by normal person, I mean the person who is not a licensed mental health professional, at what point does it go from I have a repetitive, let's call it a repetitive sin pattern, to I have an addiction, right? So let's take the guys, for instance. So the guy who walks in who says, no, I just struggle with pornography. At what point does that struggle become a category, or would you begin to categorize as that's moving from just a kind of repetitive, cycle of sin to, man, this is an addiction?
I think when it that addiction or that substance becomes a part of your life that you can't let go of, or that you start to change your schedule or your time in order to fit that in. So if you are, let's just go with the pornography addiction, of if you are maybe calling in late to work, or you are not hanging out with friends, or have noticed that, it's becoming a more frequent behavior in the classic, I can stop if I want to, but you actually can't, or you've tried multiple times to stop and it's been unsuccessful. I would say that that's then an addiction.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, that's good. That's helpful, because I think that that's something that a lot of people might think it's easy to justify to the person who is involved in any behavior to say, I'm not addicted. I just,
Right.
I can manage this.
I can have a beer. It's okay.
Exactly.
And I won't end up drinking the liquor at home.
Exactly. That's good. That's really helpful. And then so, just to kind of condense all that, it would be to say, if that's you and you're dealing with some form of an addiction and life has become a little bit unmanageable, you don't think that on your own you can quit it. You've tried it multiple times and you haven't. Why not go in and talk to somebody about it? Why not go in and talk to somebody and say, hey, working through this thing. I don't know if it's addiction or not, but I really think I could use some help.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool.
Okay. Right.
Anything for me? Anything left?
Yeah. Last question, which is one that I cannot answer. Because it's about Kanye. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on his new album, Jesus is King? And by the way, I have to just disclose that I either listen to NPR, Disney songs, or guided relaxation exercises in the car on the way to work.
Yeah,
so,
and that's after you get done hugging your trees and eating your granola in your organically free trade.
So this is a question I'm out on. So what are your thoughts?
So I started talking about this on Sunday, I think at the 11 o'clock service, and I'd stopped because I was like, this is going to be ridiculous. I think, well, so I'll actually answer this a little bit, and I'm sure nobody probably cares. Everybody's probably turned off the podcast at this point. So for those three people who are still listening, I think, if you don't know what this is, Kanye West put out an album, Jesus is King, and he has a lot of movement towards him being a Christian, and it sparked all kinds of controversy. Is he a Christian? Is he not a Christian? What should we do with this? Is the thing that he does, his Sunday services, is that actually a church? Yada, yada, yada. So I think it's the most incredible thing to watch Christians get defensive because of what is unknown. I think that if this were any other place, if this were any other thing, we would be celebrating, right? It's like if you're a sports fan, if Kanye or the equivalent, let's say the number one quarterback was really, you know, had said that they were going to Florida State, I'm going to Florida State, we would be hyped. Right now we're in a coaching search. Bob Stoops is the kind of the front runner. By the time you listen to this, he may not be the front runner. He may be hired. Who knows? But if we landed the best coach, we would be hyped about it. And the thing about it is with Kanye, it's interesting because there's something inside of, I think, a lot of people who are Christians that feel threatened by that. I think there's something a lot of people who are Christians who maybe are scared that, what if he says it and it's a PR stunt? What if he says it and he rescinds at some point? But the truth is, man, nobody's making a Kanye a pastor right now. No one's laying hands on the new believer too quickly and saying, okay, you are the prophet of our era, you know? But you look at Paul in the New Testament, and Paul was a dude who hated Christians and had extraordinary influence in the Jewish culture, which was the initial mission of the apostles, to go and especially to reach the Jewish people. And they were all around trying to reach the Jews. Barnabas was the dude who stood up and said, I am going to go on behalf of Paul. I've heard what's happened, and I'm going to go extend him the right hand of fellowship, and I'm going to be the one who kind of brings him to the apostles. I think it's so wild that one of the most influential people, one of the most influential artists in the world, is outspokenly talking about Jesus, and we think it could be a problem. Like, that is asinine to me. We have literally had people, and I don't know who it is, I don't know, you know, who it is, but I heard, you know, after the album first dropped, we had people that came to our church because of the fact that they heard Kanye's album, because they heard he was talking about Jesus, so they came to church. I mean, if that is what happens, that makes all the difference in the world. And so I am not ready to anoint Kanye as the, you know, the 12th apostle that ought to have been appointed in the book of Acts in the New Testament. I'm not ready to make him a pastor, but I am so hyped that one person might be going from death to life, from heaven to hell, or hell to heaven. I'm sorry. Hopefully it's not the other way. And I am so excited about the potential for his influence to be leveraged for the kingdom of God. There would be nothing that would make me happier than for that to be true. And I think from a lot of the stuff that he's saying, it is. But as always, it is not my job to tell who is and is not saved. I just love Jesus and say, hey, let's all do this together. So if you are in opposition to it,
you can listen to NPR.
Yeah, and go hug your trees later. And listen to Yanni live at the Acropolis or something. Anyway, hey, thanks so much for listening. If you made it this far, we love you guys. We will see you on Sunday. Got a couple weeks left in our Change My Mind series. I hope to see you soon.